Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, a conversation where good thoughts help renew the mind with the Word of God. You're here with Tim, Charlie, Andy, and Josh. Welcome to the conversation.
Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast. This is our summer episodes where we're all going to trade the announcing duties, and this is my chance to announce. So this is what I'm going to do to open this episode up. Did you guys want to hear a hunting fact about hunting?
No.
When you hunt, you actually try to hunt an animal, and then you try to harvest the animal, but you call it harvesting, not hunting.
Yeah.
Also, I'm a bright and a bouncy and a bubbly fellow. Hey, gentlemen, how we doing? Now, I was told beforehand by Charlie, just do what Charlie would do. And I was like, all right, I'm going to try.
It's interesting that you should mention that, because
a hunting analogy. Yes.
At church on Sunday, bless her heart, Nancy, she always asked me if I caught a turkey.
Bless her heart.
If you caught a turkey.
Which, common like parlance, if you're hunting, you don't catch things. If you're trapping, you trapped something. Mm-hmm. You kind of caught it if you trapped it, but if you're hunting it, you're not catching things. You're killing
it. It's a nice way to say it.
Yeah. But then we got into a discussion of our pastor's on vacation in Montana, and he was told he could hunt bear while he was there. And Whoa. She was like, why would you want to kill a bear? And I was like, well, actually, you can render a bear's fat, and it's actually really good. And it's, you know, it's a delicacy, you know. And she was done with the conversation at that point.
So is he loaded for bear? Is that what the phrase comes from? You're like loaded for bear?
I'm not sure.
Oh, that's interesting. That would be. I can see that.
I feel like we need to be loaded if a bear's coming.
Is it ever proper to say I bagged a turkey?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yep.
That reminds me of like a Looney Tunes character with a bag sneaking up behind someone. So, all right, gentlemen, how are we doing? What are we drinking?
I don't know. You made it.
Oh, yeah. I brought it. shout out to Alex and Lindsay Moore for bringing back some Herman Boys Ooh. Colombian Supremo it's somewhere north of Grand Rapids in Michigan. So thanks for the coffee.
I've heard of that before.
I wondered if you would have either gone there with Fuller or have heard of it.
Is that the same one that he gave us? Did he give us some Herman Bros?
He gave us, yes, but it was a
Herman's Boy.
It was a flavored one that he gave us.
Well, this is unflavored and it's better than Fuller's.
Okay, so but Fuller, that's the same.
It is look, the same. Though. That's the same look, right? Okay. Yeah. This is the Colombian Supremo. It's not.
He's going to text me when he listens to this and he's like, come on, guys. Mm. Bunch of grubs.
Well, he could, you know, drink good coffee.
It's because he loves you.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to give a shout out to Don Long. So I was at the board dinner a couple weeks ago and we were sitting next to the Longs and he said he was listening to our podcast and he has a book club with some guys and they read about one president every time they get together. And they've been doing this for a couple of years. So they're working through the presidency of the United States. One of them will read a book and come and then they'll share and they'll talk about it. So shout out to Don and your presidential book club. This is a presidential shout out. There we go.
Ooh,
that's how are fun. You guys doing? How are we doing? See, I know Charlie says it, so I'm just going to keep saying, how are we doing? How are we all doing?
You've done it. It's
good. Have we done it?
You've okay. definitely
are
covered
all
it.
All announcements and shout outs been announced and shouted?
Yeah. So Bible Faculty Summit is coming up end of Ooh. July.
Yeah.
My proposal was denied.
I saw that.
You saw the listing.
Yeah. I think I'm going to try to go this year.
Yeah, I'd like to go as well, but we'll see if it all works out. So my proposal for Society of Biblical Literature was accepted.
Well done.
And my ETS proposal was also accepted.
Dude, that's awesome.
So I don't think I had announced the ETS one. I think I announced the SBL one because that one I got news of first.
And that's the like big one in November.
Yeah.
Not the regional.
No.
Yeah, dude, well done.
Yeah, so national SBL and national ETS, I'll be presenting at both on de-Christologizing, de-theologizing the Song of Songs. So,
well done, man.
That's my announcement that's fantastic. There. That's it. And Bell Faculty Summit, though, didn't happen, which is fine. They have a good lineup of people presenting.
Yeah. Some of them, one of them looked interesting. It was on the ESV contextual emendation.
Yeah.
Conjectural
emendations.
For the 2025 translation or whatever.
So I've talked to Glenn Kerr. He's the one presenting about this in the past. And sometimes a conjectural emendation is when there's no textual witnesses for it at all, but somebody thinks this is the way that this text is supposed to be. So there's no text at all. And for whatever reason, well, Glencore, there is a reason.
For those listening that couldn't see me make a very snarky face, I made a very snarky face when he said
well
that.
Well done. It was deserved.
It was on a scale of 1 to 10, it was like 9.5 okay. snark.
Whatever. Anyway,
so didn't like the ranking.
The ESV, however, goes with some of these conjectural emendations, which is kind of crazy because there's no textual witnesses for it at all in the Old Testament. So it's like, why are you doing this? And they need to clean them out. I don't know why they've done it. I've run into like one, so it's not like it's something you see a lot. But I remember running into one. I'm like, why did they translate it that way? That's like terrible.
I'm kind of annoyed and wished that they would just leave it. Just leave it the way it is. It makes me
they changed annoyed it again.
That I had an 01 edition, and then I got the 07. It had a couple of changes. And then they have the 13, then the 16. And they said that was going to be the forever. They're just going to leave it. And now they did the 2025. And it's like, is this going to happen every, I don't know,
it gets 10 annoying. Years? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 2025, they changed Genesis 3:16. That was kind of like the big news one that they were talking about anyway. I don't know.
Did you like the change?
I mean, you know, it seemed whatever.
Like, maybe I remember wrong, but it seemed like it favored your view.
The original ESV, the 2016 and all previous ESV editions favored my view.
Oh, those ones favored. Those okay, ones so it's did. A change away.
Yeah, because it is basically making the text more ambiguous and allowing for more of an egalitarian interpretation of Genesis 3:16.
That's a bummer.
So that's why they don't like it. But at the same time, the text is not as clear as the ESV 2016 made it.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, okay, I can see why you're doing it, but still, it's like, you did interpret it correctly.
Okay.
So, whatever.
All right, well, I think it's that time to do that thing we do.
Books and business.
Start oh, I'm not books. Supposed to do it?
Well, I don't know.
Whatever works.
Go it's, for it's it. It's like we're in left field right
and
now.
And just to clarify for the summer, we're not all going to do books every episode. It'll be two of us. Am I understanding our assignment correctly?
Right, yeah.
I feel like I've missed my host responsibilities for not sharing that.
Oh, no. I'm just asking a genuine question.
You failed.
So I have a little, book. So Josh, a while back, was talking about a book. And I didn't realize, but I had a book on my list by the same author. And I didn't realize this until a few days ago when I pulled it off the shelf and like was going through the opening pages. And I'm like, oh, she wrote, and I'm going to say, is it My Antonia? So how do I say this person's name?
Willa Cather.
Willa Cather. And this was on Goodreads list for the year. Oh, Pioneers is the name of the book. And I just started it a couple of days ago.
We had a listener feedback right in about My Antonia as well. Tim Forrester wrote in and he had some really nice things to say about that. So really fascinating title. And I remember that episode. That was good. Anyway, just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. So as you could maybe guess by the title, Oh Pioneers, it's a settling type of a genre. It takes place in Nebraska. And I'm not very far yet, but you come upon a couple of young characters, a girl, her brother, and you find out that their father is dying, which might not be great, you know, for a family. And anyway, the opening scene is kind of, they're in town, it's super cold. There's nothing much going on because it's Nebraska, you know. But I will say when I read like, oh, this is all in Nebraska, I'm like, do I really want to read this?
Charlie, I love your shade that you always throw at Nebraska. Yeah, it warms my heart.
There's no shade in Nebraska. They have no trees. It's just a bunch of sand.
Keep going.
Anyway, yeah, I'm excited. It's not that long of a book, but having already heard about the author and kind of getting a style from Josh, I'm excited to read it. But that's it. Just started Oh Pioneers.
All right. Well, I'll talk briefly about The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. So I know none of the guys here at the table have read The Great Gatsby.
I have read The Great Gatsby.
Oh, you have? Okay, good.
But I read it while a student at a public high school. So did I really read it?
No, you didn't read it. That doesn't count.
I mean, I read it, but that was, you know, your eyes glancing words on a page. You know, yeah. We didn't really think about things we should have probably.
I did hear about it one time. That's all I got, Josh. That's it.
Well, it's been a work that is typically read in high schools. 12th grade is often a time when one reads The Great Gatsby. It's, of course, recently been put into film with Leonardo DiCaprio as Jay Gatsby. So perhaps people are more familiar with it because of that than with the actual book itself. But F. Scott Fitzgerald, American author, 20th century, roaring 20s. So that's when this book takes place between the World Wars. And the primary character is, of course, Jay Gatsby. But it is told from the perspective of a very interesting narrator, Nick Carraway. And the other primary characters would be Tom and Daisy Buchanan, Jordan Baker, and then some minor characters as well. And I'm going to try to talk about this, as I said, briefly, but also without giving away too many spoilers. But even if I do spoil some things, it's okay. You still need to read the book. I'll just say aesthetically at the beginning, this is one of Fitzgerald's obviously most famous works, but it is a beautiful book in terms of its writing. The prose just shines on the page. It's really delightful to read, although the content is something that maybe not all that delightful to read at times. But it is about characters that grow up in, well, they grow up in the Midwest, but they move to the East Coast. And you have this kind of wealthy set. So these are people that are part of what we might call kind of an American aristocracy. And you have the conflict between those who live on East Egg, which is a part of Long Island, and those would be those who have wealth generationally, old wealth. And then you have the rising nouveau riche, the newly rich, which would be people like Gatsby. And there's a conflict kind of between those two sets, and the newly rich never really fit in with the landed and the generational wealth. And so that's kind of an underlying tension in this book. I just sort of want to read a couple of passages and then talk briefly about what I think this book is after, and then we'll wrap it up. But early on, I said this interesting narrator, Nick Carraway, he has this to say about Gatsby. He says, "When I came back from the East last autumn, I felt that I wanted the world to be in uniform and at a sort of moral attention forever. I wanted no more riotous excursions with privileged glimpses into the human heart. Only Gatsby, the man who gives his name to this book, was exempt from my reaction. Gatsby, who represented everything for which I have an unaffected scorn. If personality is an unbroken series of successful gestures, then there was something gorgeous about him, some heightened sensitivity to the promises of life, as if he were related to one of those intricate machines that register earthquakes 10,000 miles away. This responsiveness had nothing to do with that flabby impressionability which is dignified under the name of the creative temperament. It was an extraordinary gift for hope, a romantic readiness such as I have never found in any other person, and which it is not likely I shall ever find again. No, Gatsby turned out all right at the end. It was what preyed on Gatsby, what foul dust floated in the wake of his dreams, that temporarily closed out my interest in the abortive sorrows and short-winded elations of men." So you get a sense there of the beauty of the writing in this novel, but you also get a sense of the complicated character that is Nick Carraway, but also this Jay Gatsby, and what is it that makes Jay Gatsby great? And that's a primary question that the novel, I think, is asking us to consider. What is it about this character that, as we read, we find maybe not all that admirable in certain ways? What is it about him that makes him great? Well, it's this extraordinary gift for hope and a romantic readiness that Nick Carraway mentions about Gatsby. And so, again, I don't want to spoil too much of the plot, but Gatsby, I think what makes him great is, in contrast to these other members of these aristocratic classes who are kind of, you know, enmeshed in an ennui or a boredom or a cultural malaise, you know, between the world wars, not really sure of what to do. Some of their grand myths and meta narratives about the world have exploded because of the suffering of the First World War, and they've come back, and they've, you know, Gertrude Stein calls the expatriates among whom Fitzgerald was one, living in Europe between the world wars, as being the lost generation, this generation that's lost its purpose, the telos, the goal of life has been shrouded in mystery. And so they're kind of listless and restless and not able to find anything. What sets Gatsby apart from that set is that he has a goal. He has something that he is pursuing with all of his being. And that something is Daisy Buchanan. This girl, this woman, with whom he was involved romantically as a young man, but she decided not to marry him because he's beneath her in terms of social status. And so he goes off to the war. She goes off and marries a wealthy man, part of this kind of generational wealth, Tom Buchanan. And in the time between that and when this novel picks up, Gatsby has been accumulating wealth, and he's been striving to put himself in a position where he can win Daisy, because he now is part of that aristocracy. And at this incredible moment, so everything that Gatsby does is with that purpose in mind. And so in some ways, this is kind of a secular retelling of, you know, that New Testament parable about, you know, you find treasure in a field, you go back and you sell all that you have to buy that field. Now, that's kind of what Gatsby is doing. He's pouring all of his energy and purpose into winning Daisy, to the extent that he buys this huge mansion right across the bay from where her house is. And he throws these extravagant parties in hopes that word will get to Daisy and that she'll show up at one of these parties and he'll be able to see her. And there's all kinds of other things that are going on here as well. But at a crucial moment in the book, he meets up with Daisy for the first time in several years. And this is what, you know, they talk briefly, but this is what happens. Daisy put her arm through his abruptly, but he seemed absorbed in what he had just said. Possibly it had occurred to him that the colossal significance of that light had now vanished forever. It's a reference to the light at the end of the dock across the bay that represents Daisy and Tom's mansion. Compared to the great distance that had separated him from Daisy, it had seemed very near to her, almost touching her. It had seemed as close as a star to the moon. Now it was again a green light on a dock. His count of enchanted objects had diminished by one. And so there's a couple of ways to read that line. Is Fitzgerald here suggesting that the dream of winning Daisy is now in some ways complete? Like there's a kind of reality to it. So it's no longer a dream, but it's a reality. That's kind of one way of thinking of it. But I think the way Fitzgerald would actually want us to read it is with a kind of sad undertone, that it's this thing that he's pursued, and now that he's reached it, he's finding it falling short of his expectations. Yes. It's no longer this enchanted object that he once thought. It's not satisfying him, in other words. And I think that's really what Fitzgerald is after. And what makes Gatsby great is that, in contrast to all these other people, he has a telos, he has a goal. But for you and for me as Christians, obviously we're seeing this and we're thinking, well, ultimately, that goal that he's striving after will never satisfy. And in this moment, you see that reality sink in, even on Gatsby, to a degree. And so it's a powerful cautionary tale for you and for me to read this novel. And I want students to think of it in that light. Sometimes they have resistance to it because they understand, oh, it's about these guys that are wealthy and they're unfaithful and they're, you know, they have mistresses and they drink alcohol and throw extravagant parties. It does have that, right? But that's not the thing that we ought to be focusing on. The thing we ought to be focusing on is this powerful lesson that the things that you might seek to provide satisfaction when achieved or grasped will ultimately fall short, unless the thing that you're seeking satisfaction is the thing that you've been designed to find satisfaction in, and that is Christ alone.
Well, let's have a final meditation from God's word. I'm going to go to Ecclesiastes chapter 9 in light of the Great Gatsby and the life that Fitzgerald is presenting, I think this would be kind of appropriate. I'm going to read Ecclesiastes 9, 7 through 10. Go, eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. A lot of people don't like this passage because it seems to promote unbridled hedonism. At the beginning there, go eat your bread with joy. Drink your wine with a merry heart. In other words, what is Solomon encouraging the reader to do? Well, he's encouraging them to actually enjoy the good gifts from God, not to strive for more, but to be content and grateful. So I don't see this as an unbridled hedonism, but instead it's bread. As you think through what bread is just a basic necessity of life, that you can enjoy your bread and just take delight in it is a good thing. To drink your wine with a merry heart, again, we've had an episode on wine, so think through the beverages that God gives you that taste good and to enjoy them. It states then, for God has already approved what you do. Well, what has God done? Well, God has given you many good things. And this really needs to be developed from chapter 9, verses 1 and earlier, but we're going to just keep going. So it's not that God's approved of everything that you have done, but God's given you good blessings. And so to take delight in them. Verse 8 seems counter wisdom to the book of Proverbs. In verse 8, it states, let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Well, to whiten your clothes, you're going to have to exert a lot of work. And then what's going to happen to those white clothes? They're going to get dirty again. Furthermore, putting oil on your head, oil is like putting moisturizer on your body. And of course, this would be a delicacy. And the book of Proverbs talks about the superfluous of the individual who is putting on oil all the time. Because it's a perishable thing, and then you're going to be poor. Well, what is Ecclesiastes, this presumably counter wisdom? You know what? If God has given you a blessing of nice clothes, or even the blessing of the wealth to be able to take care of your body, why not take delight in them? It is a good gift from God. Granted, this can be abused. Yes, I'm not advocating going into debt so then you can look more wealthy than you actually are. Was that Gatsby? Was he had this appearance of wealth that he didn't really have? Okay. Instead, I don't know. I haven't read the book. Instead, what does God want you to do? He wants you to enjoy his good gifts. This is not just the food and the drink, but also the clothing and then some of the cosmetics. And then in verse 9, enjoy life with the wife whom you love. So speaking to a man, you could flip it around, a wife enjoying her husband. And then it states all the days of your vain life. I don't like the translation vain there. I like the translation enigmatic. It's an enigmatic life. It's a life that you can't understand. It's a life that you cannot figure out. You're going to run into problems throughout life. So what's the answer? Walk in faith and enjoy God's good gifts. And the good gift that he shares in verse 9 is the good gift of companionship, husband and wife, and to take delight in one another. Then in verse 9, it states, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. God has given you a portion. Some people have a bigger portion than others. Some live in mansions. Some live in, well, trailer parks. Whatever your portion is, it's a portion, and be grateful for it. Finally, in verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. Wow, well, that ended on a real positive note. Gee, you're going to die. Thanks. Appreciate that, Solomon. But as you live your life, what should you do? You should exert yourself. And kind of interesting that Gatsby did that. He exerted himself and he lived life presumably to the fullest. But did he enjoy life? Most people who exert themselves, they don't enjoy life. They just keep accumulating more stuff, for which they are then ungrateful for, and they can't actually enjoy. It's summertime. Summertime is a good time. And I pray, as you go through this summer, that you can take delight in God's good gifts, whether big or small. Take delight in the little things, and then thank Him and be grateful.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Thinklings Podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, or potential topics that you'd like us to discuss, you can contact us through our email, thinklingspodcast@gmail.com. Remember, don't let this conversation end with this podcast. Read good books, talk about them with your friends, and always continue to cultivate your mind. See you next time on the Thinklings Podcast.